Okay, today is the first day of the first month in our biblical calendar, which is also known as New Year's to some people, and we would also call it the month of Abib. Abib's going to be the focus of the study, the meaning of Abib, what is it, how we know when it happens, and how we know that we are following the correct calendar or something close to it, or have the ability to follow it. And it should be something fairly easy that common people, whether they be farmers or fishermen or working people, would be able to know that time of the year has come, and shouldn't be something complicated that needs complicated calculations or astronomical observances with telescopes and such to find out. It should be a fairly easy way to understand when Yahweh's year begins. If it's not easy enough for us to understand, then it would seemingly be not required of us to follow. So that's something that when we read about it, we should be able to put it into practice in our life if we were to try to restore the kingdom of Israel at the present time. Okay, going first, we're going to read Exodus chapter 12, which does not mention Abib by name. That'll be in 13 for the first time in the Bible. But it does mention the command that is given to the children of Israel that they could understand when to start their months if it were that they had lost time or were using some other type of calculations. The Egyptians used a calendar that was based off of the stars and the sun and the moon as well, but they also relied heavily on the Nile River's flooding and things of that nature. So the people may have somewhat had a different system they had to live under by servitude. So it could be one of the reasons why God had to make this well known to the people that this is when they should start things. 12:1 of Exodus. Yahweh spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. So, important words that needs to be asked is this month. So, what is a month? What's a month made out of? The beginning of months, the word beginning, would also be another question. And the first months of the year is all the same. The word month comes from the Hebrew word kodesh. It means to renew or to rebuild something. It is used other places in the Bible if somebody would like to look for themselves. When it refers to the rebuilding of cities and the rebuilding of buildings and the rebuilding of places. The reestablishment of things is also used. So it is the rebuilding. The same word is used when it is used in the correct term as new moon, translated new moon, as in the new rebuilding of the moon. But the word kodesh is also used for any day of the month also, but it lists the number. In other words, it would be the first day of the rebuilding, first day of Kodesh. It would be the second day of the month or the rebuilding, all the way to the end, which when we think of the rebuilding, you would think that the full moon would be the pinnacle of it, but it's actually the building of a month that we're thinking about. We're not thinking about the building of the light necessarily of the moon. So that is what a Kodesh is. And needs to should be understood. So this is a rebuilding of a month that is being commanded to be to us. The word month in English originally, as everybody here knows because I've talked about it so much, the word month in English used to always refer back to a moon. The month was actually how even books tell you that it was pronounced, so that the moon and the month were always shared in connection. Until Pope Gregory's calendar became more prevalent in the English-speaking world or the Saxon-speaking world, and they detached the meaning of a month to what we have now, which is an abstract period of time. That can be from 28 to 30 days, or 31 days, depending on what time period you're in. The word beginning is the word rosh in Hebrew, and the word rosh means the head. It's the head of months. So in Hebrew, the word head would be referring to the beginning of something or the very pinnacle when things start. Then it says it'll be the first month of the year to you. Now that word first next is also a word related to Rosh, but it's Roshan. And Roshan refers to the first, whereas the beginning would refer to the chief, more or less, or the head. So while the two are contracts of each other, you get Rosh from Roshan, or you would build onto it in order to get Roshan. They mean the same thing. At the same time, they have two different meanings, so that we were not to get confused that this was definitely the beginning and the first month, and it was definitely the first month of the year. So it was duly confirmed to us, doubly confirmed that we would start our time at this point. Now, it says in Exodus 13, in verse 4, "This day came ye out in the month Abib." And in 5 it says, "And it shall be when Yahweh shall bring thee into the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, which he sware unto thy fathers to give thee a land flowing with milk and honey, that thou shalt keep this service in this month. 7 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast to Yahweh." And it goes on to list more of the ordinances of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's the first time the word Abib occurs as it relates to a month. However, the word is very first time used when the hail came during the plague of Egypt, which is how we are going to make our connection as to what Abib means in the sense when it's referred to in future occurrences when it talks about it. In Exodus chapter 9, there was a hailstorm that Yahweh said was going to happen. It happened. And the repercussions of it are then listed in 31 as it regards the crops that were in the field. And it says in 31, "The flax and the barley was smitten, for the barley was in the ear, and the flax was bold. But the wheat and the rye were not smitten, for they were not grown up." Okay, and an alternative translation of grown up is they were hidden, or they were still covered. This is most likely referenced because at this point, wheat would be like grass. Wheat is still hidden. If it were to get hit by hail, it wouldn't be much different than walking on the grass and then the grass growing back up, which we have seen happen. Now, this is prior to the Passover. You can speculate as to how many days prior to the Passover it happened. Could have been a month previous. Could have been just a few weeks previous. But it could have also been just a few days, which is probably where I am. And the reason I would say that is because when Moses asks Pharaoh to let the people go for the very first time, Pharaoh responds after Moses says they got to go and have a feast in the wilderness and sacrifice to Yahweh. And Pharaoh's response in the Hebrew is that, "What? Would you have them have a Sabbath?" and let them go from their work. So when Pharaoh responds to Moses, their implication of the feast day was already that they were going to rest. There was a day of rest. And I would also say that when he started asking to let the people go, Moses and all the elders of the people that knew their history knew that on the selfsame day that they came out of Egypt, it was already promised to Abraham that his people would be in Egypt for a certain amount of time, and that that promise to Abraham happened on Passover Day, which would have been the full moon of the first month that they were following. So Moses knew the Sabbath was on the full moon, and he also would have known that there is a feast that occurs at that time, and he knew when the promise was made to Abraham that happened 430 years previous, as listed in the scriptures, and that that period of time was about ready to be completed. So he knew that on that same day, it's going to happen. So Moses already knew that Pharaoh's heart was going to be hardened for several days. Several destructions had to happen. But he knew when the release was going to take place and when they were going to leave Egypt. He absolutely had an understanding that that was going to be fulfilled because God already promised it to Abraham's descendants. So, with that little side note on there, back to the text, it says, the barley was smitten and the barley was in the ear. Well, the ear, word in the ear, is the word abib. And so it says, the barley was smitten for the barley was abib. So there's a clue as to what abib means. It's barley when it's in the... Yes?
Ear.
When it's in the ear. So back to Exodus 13:4. It says, this day came ye out in the month Abib. So this day came ye out in the month of green ears. Most people know that who have studied the Bible and studied the language of the Bible. But Abib also has another meaning. Very interesting meaning when you break it down. Abib is a construct of Ab or Abba. So it's a construct of Ab, which means father, and Ib, or Yib, because it's actually a Y sound that should be in there. Now the word Yib can be found in the Strong's Concordance under 2980, and it means to cry out, which sounds kind of strange. So you have crying out, father, right? No, well, in the Hebrew understanding of it, it's a little different. If you look at the words connected to it, like 2981, which would be Yabol, with an L added to the end of it, it says a crop, as in a fruit, crops, things you bring in. And then 2987 would be to bring or to cry forth, to carry forth. I'm sorry, not cry forth, but to carry forth, to bring forth or to carry forth. So the whole word has to do with the father crop, the chief bringing forth, the first things brought forth, the first ripened things would be another way to say it. And that Yabab word, which I first talked about in 2980, to cry out, and the reason that doesn't make sense is in the Hebrew, when you carry something forth, or you bring something forth, the concepts are the same. Something's being brought out. Something's being brought outside of. It's being brought forth. So that's what's being referenced, is it's the very first thing brought forth in the year. So it's the month of the first bringing forth. The Septuagint translation, or the LXX, which is a translation of the Bible that's taken from an ancient Greek manuscript, which predates the Hebrew one as far as the ones that we have available to us in age, says this, and Brenton, which is what I'm reading from the Brenton translation, inserts a word. In Exodus 13:4, he says, "For on this day ye go forth in the month of new corn." And the word corn is in italics, as it should be, because in the Greek it is just the month, which if you do the etymology on that, the word month in Greek means the same thing as the Kodesh of Hebrew. And it's just the new month. I believe the word neon is used, which is where we get neo, or new, N-E-O-N-E-W. So they say that throughout. Anytime you find the word abib in the Hebrew text, you will find the word new in reference. And the translator understood that it was referring to a time of new corn that was being dealt with, so he put corn in there, I guess, to try to keep your mind on track. But really, you should do your own studying in order to understand it. And here, looking into the Septuagint translation of 931, it says that the barley was advanced, is how Brenton put it, and gives an alternative translation for it was in the ear also. So the barley at that time in Egypt was advanced, and the flax was seeding already. It was already ready to be harvested, sounded like. So that was why the damage occurred, and how it occurred at that time. So understanding the meaning of abib is that it's referencing the stage that the barley's in, and it's also referencing in general the father, or the first crops that are bringing forth, being brought forth, carried forth, and can be recognized by, should be able to be recognized by looking out the window. You can see that things outside are starting to bring forth fruit and starting to bring forth seed, and that would be no different when you were planting crops in the previous year, as it's going to respond to the heat and the conditions that are taking place. So if the year is prolonged in cold, if the cold is prolonged of the year, then it's going to wait and take some more time for it to advance and to bring forth a green ear. But if it is a warmer year, you're probably going to have that happening also. The Bible talks in places where I don't have a note in front of me on it. I believe it is in Deuteronomy, though, if I remember correctly, that it talks about the things that the fruits that are brought forth by the moon and by the sun, and that somehow the moon and the sun both play a role on the way things ripen and develop, which if you pay close enough attention, I'm pretty sure that you'll notice that that is an absolute happening, and is probably why God reminded the people to use the calendar that he set up at the creation in Genesis 1:14, that the lights of the heavens should be used to do things, to plant and to observe times. So we have both a planting calendar, an agricultural calendar, that's being offered to the Israelite people, which would tell us that God desires his people to be more involved with the land in general. Not to say that there isn't a place for people who build things and do things outside of animal husbandry, but that the nation itself is going to have to survive off of eating. You know, no matter if you can build a house or fix a car or, you know, doctor an animal up, or whatever it is that you do in life, you got to eat. And a self-sustaining country, which God was bringing the people into, needed to know how to plant their crops, needed to know what to do. So that is one of the reasons why God chose the agricultural calendar to be a calendar for the people to use for their nation. Secondly, moving on into other reasons. It was supposed to directly correspond, the month moon of Abib, the new moon of Abib, would also have to directly correspond to the moon. So not only is it the green ear of barley that's having to be there, but it's also that there's a new moon taking place. At this point, it says that this will be the new part of the year that is going to occur when this all happens. The next scripture that we're going to look at is going to be in Exodus 23, verse 15. We'll go just above to where it's in 14, where it says, three times thou shalt keep a feast unto me in the year. Thou shalt keep the feast of unleavened bread. Thou shalt eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded thee in the time appointed. That word, time appointed, is a subject of interest. Of the month Abib. For in it thou camest out from Egypt, and none shall appear before me empty. The feast of harvest, the first fruits of thy labor, which thou hast sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering, which is in the end of the year, when thou hast gathered in thy labors out of the field, three times in the year, all thy males shall appear before the Lord Yahweh. So, the command is that three times in a year, these are called the pilgrim feasts by people. It's a term, it's not a biblical term, but it's a term people refer to. And these are called the pilgrim feasts or the pilgrim festivals, which meant that the people would go back to Jerusalem if they could, if they were clean and had the ability. And they would keep the Passover. They would keep what we call Pentecost, which is referred to here as the Feast of Harvest of the First Fruits of Your Labor. That's also a synonym for Pentecost, which is 50 days after Passover. And then also the Feast of Ingathering, which it says is at the end of the year, which is not the end of the year in the sense of it's going to happen at the same time as the month Abib, or right before Abib. But rather it's referring to the agricultural or planting year. So notice that when Yahweh instructs the people when he wants them to come and worship him, keep the feasts, he uses Abib as his reference point again to start them off. And the agricultural calendar is of much importance. If you're off of it, if the people are off of it, then they are not going to be able to worship him in the way that he wanted them to. Now, in a society, the society we live in, in the society that we live in, where we don't have nearly as many farmers as we probably should, and we aren't as close to the ground as we need to be, we might ask, why does this matter? And the reason, I think, would be is biblical sustainability is probably the object of Yahweh's thought. When Yahweh establishes something, he tries to establish it, and I say try because we are the vacillating part of the equation, that he tries to establish something that can be kept forever. And he gives us criteria that fall on things like the sun, the moon, the stars. He gives us promises based on the same. He gives us times where we can do things and worship him based off of what he gives us, which would be agriculture, which is the way you would know for sure how Yahweh is responding to you as a nation, which is how the agriculture is coming in, how blessed you were. This is a thing that, like I said, now is not as common, but at the same time, if there ever comes a day when electricity fails and the automobile is not as prevalent and we go back to the Dark Ages, so to speak, people are going to be farming again, and this is going to be a guide for them on how to stay alive. The Bible will offer a calendar, if they can match these things up, If they can match the time of a bib up with it, they will not be lost in the calendar cycle of the way Yahweh desires to be worshipped, and it will help them in being sustained in establishing a new kingdom, which hopefully, if that would ever happen, we would do things His way and not do things our way. So, agricultural calendar is definitely the thing that Yahweh desires from His people. Now, there are a bunch of other places, and I'm just going to read the next one, which is Exodus 34:18, if anybody wants to look that up, where you can read more about when we came out in the time of the month Abib, which would have been the 15th day. And then going to Leviticus chapter 2:14, this is once the priesthood was established that this law is made. Now this is in reference to the day after Passover, after the day of unleavened bread, the first Sabbath of unleavened bread, which is the 15th day of the first month. The lamb would be killed on the 14th day. It was eaten at evening, which is reckoned as the next day, so you're actually eating on the Sabbath day. And the following day is called Day of First Fruits. It's also the day, very importantly, that Christ rose from the tomb and rose from the dead and triumphed over death. So in 2, verse 14, it says, "If thou offer a meat offering of thy first fruits unto Yahweh, thou shalt offer for the meat offering of thy first fruits green ears." That two words, green ears, is the word abib. First fruits, green ears, of corn dried by the fire, even corn beaten out of the full ears. Then he goes on to tell you how that you can do that. Now, maybe I should have read 13 first, or 12, and I'll just go back and recap on that because it's important also. In 12 it says, "As for the oblation of the first fruits," and the reason the word first fruits is interesting and is something that should be noted is because if you were to look up the word for first fruits again, you would see once again that word Rashan that happens. So it gives a fuller meaning to Exodus chapter 12 whenever Yahweh was speaking to the people. And while it's not the identical Hebrew word, like I said, it's a construct from Rosh. So the first fruits of the year, this first fruits time, is also part of the year. It brings the agricultural calendar and the biblical calendar together. And it says further on, "Ye shall offer them offer them unto Yahweh, but they shall not be burnt on the altar for a sweet savor. Every oblation of thy meat offering shall thou season with salt, neither shalt thou suffer the salt of the covenant of thy God to be lacking from thy meat offering. With all thine offerings thou shalt offer salt. And if thou offer a meat offering of thy first fruits unto Yahweh, thou shalt offer for the meat offering of thy first fruits green ears or a bib of corn, dried by the fire, even corn beaten out of the full ears." So, another thing that's interesting to mention there is that the first fruits that were to be offered were dried. And Josephus tells us, and you can look this up on your own, Josephus tells us that they would dry it just like it says by the fire and make this meat offering because it was green still. So while the grain was there inside, it was not fully formed and fully developed where you could take it and harvest it completely yet. I'm not going to say that that's how it is every year. I can't be sure of that, because there could be times where things would be offered more cured. But I would say that no matter what, that the people probably roasted the barley in a sense, or dried it by the fire, because it improved the texture. As I remember reading elsewhere in baking, that barley is roasted in order to make it bind better. I'm pretty sure that that's the reasoning behind it, behind or one of the reasons behind why maybe Yahweh asked people to do that. Something just occurred to me as I was thinking. I went to check notes. That word for first fruit, I was saying, I had said Roshan again, which is not the case, but rather it is Roshiyith, which is also a construct of Rosh, which comes from the same root as Roshan. And I apologize for saying that, but it was occurring to me in the back of my mind here as I was talking. Okay, we're going to go next to Deuteronomy chapter 16, which is another verse, line of verses on the calendar, which is not going to end them by any means. There's quite a few other things to talk about. Okay, 16 verse 1 says, "Observe the month of Abib. Keep the Passover unto Yahweh thy God. For in the month of Abib, Yahweh thy God brought thee forth out of Egypt by night." And he goes on to refer to the Passover and unleavened bread and all the ordinances connected to that. Jumping down to six, he says, "At the place which Yahweh thy God shall choose to place his name in, there you'll sacrifice the Passover at even," referring to the evening, "at the going down of the sun, at the appointed time," or at the season "that thou came forth out of Egypt." Now, that word season, once again, that appointed time, the biblical word, the Hebrew word, I should say, being used is the word moed, which we have discussed in Bible studies in the past, probably not any being recorded though, but that a moed is an appointed time that Yahweh has for a reason. It's mentioned in one of the reasons for the lights of the heavens in Genesis 1:14, where it says that he made them for signs and seasons. And the word season is that same word moed or moedim, depending on the tense of the word. And it's best understood most likely as an appointed time, because the word season is no longer used in the way that we use it, in the way it was used in the King James version. A season back then didn't mean like the four seasons, spring, summer, fall, and winter, but rather it meant a designated time, a period of time that was appointed. It was an appointed time, just like the Bible would use it. But notice that when he refers to the Passover, at this time he's talking about when the people had the temple, that they were to go to Jerusalem for the Passover, that they were not going to do it the way they had done it previously, but that they would go to Jerusalem in order to offer the Passover and to eat it with their families, one of the pilgrim festivals, once again. It was commanded to be done at the going down of the sun, which we talked about, when you came forth out of Egypt at an appointed time. It specifies this very plainly, that Yahweh desires his people to try their best to find out when this season is, when this appointed time is. And he's given us quite a bit of criteria to understand it. Now, I'm going to venture outside, leaving there, where he says, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover. All of that is very protective language. And I'm going to go outside of the Bible just for a minute, back to Josephus, where I have one of his quotes. It can be found if you are to look at the Antiquities of the Jews, is the name of the book in English. Book 3, chapter 10, verse 5, where Josephus talks about the heavenly alignment that happens during this time. And here's how he puts it. In the month of Xanthicus, which is by us, referring to the Judeans at his time, called Nisan, and is the beginning of our year. On the 14th day of the lunar month, when the sun is in Aries, for in this month it was that we were delivered from bondage under the Egyptians. The law ordained that we should every year slay the sacrifice which I before told you we slew when we came out of Egypt, and which was called the Passover. Now, Josephus talks about a month called Xanthicus, which is a Greek month, and just as much confusion, or if not more, because there's less written about it, is going to be to find out when Xanthicus occurs now, as much as when Nisan or Abib, Nisan being another word for Abib after the Babylonian captivity. He says it's the beginning of the year, which is what we just got done reading, where Yahweh spoke to Moses and said, this month will be the beginning of your months and the first of your year, right? So Josephus definitely has a biblical tone to his voice when he's speaking. Now, he lists three things to line up the heavenly events with Abib or Nisan or Xanthicus. That is the lunar month, the sun, and he says when the sun is in Aries. Now, all three heavenly lights, everything out of Genesis 1, 13, 14 are mentioned. Everything there, sun, moon, and stars are all mentioned. So he gives almost a clock-type reckoning of when in his time. Josephus was a contemporary with Christ. He wrote about Christ, wrote about John the Baptist. He wrote about James the Just. He wrote about, who was the brother of Christ. He wrote about the Christians that were there. He wrote about the destruction of the temple. He wrote about a phenomenal amount of things that if we didn't have Josephus' writings, we wouldn't see some of the fulfillments of prophecy that Christ and the disciples prophesied would happen and the prophets prophesied. While he's definitely not a biblical, God-inspired writer of any, I'm not saying that at all, and that we should take his words as scripture, he is a historical, firsthand eyewitness testimony and giving evidence. He's the evidence that we have of what happened during the time of Christ. Nowhere in Christ's discourse with the Judeans of his time, or with the priests, or with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, did he argue when the calendar was to be changed, or if it was wrong or anything. He went to the feasts, even went to a couple of the festivals that are not commanded by the pilgrim, as a pilgrim festival by Yahweh, the Festival of Lights, which happens in the winter, which was a commemoration of the temple being reestablished in the time of the Maccabees, was one of the festivals that Christ attended also. So he was keeping in track with the nation, so to speak. The nation was at a lined up point, and if we believe that Christ followed the law blamelessly, that he did everything perfectly, Yahweh had to, at the time of Christ and Josephus, had the people on the accurate and correct calendar for Christ to fulfill all of this perfectly. And beyond that, there would be some, maybe, who don't give the law and give Yahweh as much credit as it's due or as much seriousness as is needed. There are some who might say something to the effect that It didn't matter so long as he kept the Passover. Well, that's not the case, because whenever we think of the promise made to Abraham, all the way back in the book of Genesis, which I'm pretty heavy on, Genesis 15, when we think about that promise that was done on Passover, that said, on this, know of a certainty, Abraham, I am going to bring your people out of Egypt after I bring them there and keep them there. And it says in the Exodus account of when they left, that on that self same day they left. All the armies came out. And then also they entered into the land of Canaan and kept the Passover. And the manna disappeared. On that same day of the Passover, they entered into the promised land, passed over the Jordan. All of the chronology, all of the things that are in line and in order, all the way back to that time period, fell on special days to Yahweh. Days that his heavens declared to us and that were able to be reckoned. So Abraham, the Passover, the entering in at Canaan, which was also another fulfillment of Abraham's promise. And not to mention, Christ's coming, dying, resurrecting, happening on the same astronomical day, at the same time, when Yahweh promised it would all happen. Furthermore, they would have been keeping the feast, even if it was called Nisan or the Xanthicus, they would have been keeping it so that the green ears of barley, which in Josephus' time it was attested to, it was confirmed that they dried the barley at that same time by the fire so that things were happening. So with that being said, I'm going to put my trust in the idea that Josephus told us what happened during the time of Christ, Christ being perfect, that if he followed the calendar Josephus followed, which he lists out to us right here, that it would be accurate and correct and good for us to follow the same calendar that Christ followed. And that would lead us to these conclusions. That on the 14th day of a lunar month, which 14th day of a lunar month always puts you on the day before the full moon. So our month is definitely lunar, not solar. It's not stellar, which would be dictated by stars. It is not a pre-calculated calendar like we have now, but rather we are supposed to be using a lunar month. We are supposed to also use the lunar month that occurs when the sun is in Aries. Aries is not a biblical word. It's not used in the Bible once. Now, lots of writers from that time frame were very familiar with the zodiac, the constellation groups that have pictures in them. Philo of Alexandria mentions the zodiac also, and many other writers of that time knew what it was, and most ancient people used the zodiac in the calendar system. But what that is a grouping of stars which represents, in Greek, a ram. And if you were to have translated all of Josephus' works, which were all written in Greek, correctly, he would have said, on the 14th day of the lunar month when the sun is in the ram, would have been how he would say it. So if the word Aries is a hang-up for you because it's a zodiac or a horoscope type thing, don't let it be offensive. It's just an animal figurine that they got out of dots in the sky, stars. But this was a clock that was able to be seen generation after generation and able to be used. Now, there is one objection to the idea of following Josephus' lead on this. That objection is called the precession of the equinox. And that states that while the sun does go into different constellation groups, that 2,000 years ago, these groups were different than they are today. And this has led us into two reckonings of stars. One is called the tropical zodiac, and one is called the sidereal zodiac. So, in other words, in the time span it took from Christ to now, people would say because of the precession of the equinox, that's how the sun moves on Earth, in comparison to the way the stars are moving with the sun, or the sun with the stars, that something's shifted and changed, and that we are degrees off, and that basically what has happened is now the Passover should be celebrated when the sun is in Pisces, which is the fish symbol, and which would lead you to be a month previous to what we're talking about right now. If you're listening to this right now, which is April the 30th of 2014, on the Gregorian calendar system, that basically you would have been a month previous to Kol Abib. Now what we have to do is we have to ask ourselves if when we celebrate the Passover astronomically, if we were to actually take this literally and say that no, Josephus told us that this is how Christ did it and this is the way they reckoned it, and that as long as the barley is able to be used and the wheat is going to be there for the first fruit for Pentecost, which is the wheat harvest, and the ingathering will line up with where we're at, is there a reason we should no longer use the sidereal zodiac, which is the literal seeing of the sun into Aries or Taurus or any of these constellation groups? Is there a reason we should abandon it and say, no, the precession of the equinox is here and we know about it, and because of it, we should actually go backwards and try to keep things at a different time and use a different type of reckoning like the equinox, which is also not mentioned by the Bible anywhere, which is what some people do. They say the first new moon after the spring equinox is the month of Abib. I say, and I think that it's logical to say, no, the month of Abib is when the month of Abib is. In other words, the month of the green ears of barley is when there are green ears of barley. And if the green ears of barley occur when the sun is in Aries, where you're living, and most places in the world, then according to the lunar month that happens then, you should be reckoning your feast, because that's how you could actually establish a kingdom just like the one in the Bible if you so desired, with God's help. But you couldn't do that, say, if you decided that you were going to keep the Passover in the full moon that occurs 2 months previous to this one. You know, when the barley's not up at all and things are frozen and the only thing you can harvest is snow. That would probably not be able to be done. Would not allow you to have any of the new crops that are being offered out of the text. It would not allow us to, in America, Israel, or anywhere else, bring about the fulfillment of what is written. But what is able to be discovered is that if you have the only, that I'm aware of, maybe there's another one written, the only sun, moon, and star reference historically of what was happening during the time of the perfect Christ, as to how he kept a how he would have kept the Passover, when he would have died, which is pretty important. If that's the reference we have, then that's what we have to go by. So finishing up with that statement on or by Josephus and giving a reason why the time right now being referred to as under the sidereal reckoning of the zodiac would be a more accurate way of doing it. Not only do we have testimony from Josephus of the time the clock set in the heavens, but also that we still in our present day have a working ability to do this based off of what is happening on the earth with the barley at the stage it's at. Just for consideration, you know, there are those, like I said, that would say that we need to not follow a sidereal zodiac because it is a precession happening. But there is other possibilities that we at this present time, and I don't think ever will, understand climate change and the way things change in our climate and the way things happen. And to just consider with that idea that perhaps more is connected to the stars and the heavens as how the Earth responds to it as than we know about. And this is just a thought, but there is no answer as to why things happen the way they do and why the climate is the way that it is and things change. But the possibility is that the precession is not that of the equinox, but that maybe it is a precession of the stars that's happening. And if there's even any relevance to it all at all, there's just other ways that you can look at it if you're trying to justify keeping all the evidence that you have pointing to something and throwing it out the window because there's a precession that could possibly be changing things. So just put that out for consideration. I'm not saying that it's absolutely true. It's just a thought, and it'd be nice to have more people thinking about things like that. With the last 10 minutes here, less now, just going to go to point out that now that we've covered the meaning of Abib, covered the beginning of the year, and that of Passover also, it would be good to understand the Sabbath cycle, and this is just a condensed version of it that would happen if you would use what is called a lunar Sabbath or a lunar-based calendar that has the days, the weeks, or the Sabbaths, and the months and years all integrated one and the same. There's a writer that's considered to be apocryphal, but I think that it would be good for most people to read it, out of a book called Ecclesiasticus, or also The Wisdom of Jesus, the Son of Sirach. And he writes this in Ecclesiasticus 43, 6 through 8. He says, "And then the moon, ever punctual, to mark the times, an everlasting sign. It is the moon that signals the feasts, a luminary that wanes after being full. The month derives its name from hers. She waxes wonderfully in her phases, a banner of the hosts on high, shining in the vault of heaven," or the vault of the heavens. So, in Jesus, son of Sirach's mind, who would have lived, they believe, about 200 years prior to Christ, in his mind, the moon signaled the feasts, that it was a luminary, in the heavens. Some people would even argue that it's a luminary. They'd say, no, it's a reflector, not a luminary. But in his mind, it was. And we know that this work would have been written in Hebrew originally because he says the month derives its name from hers. Now, Greek would also be true. The Greek word for month is main, but it would also be true. But what he says afterwards establishes it. It derives its name from hers because it waxes wonderfully in her phases, talking about how it changes and it rebuilds, as we talked about the word kodesh previously being the word for month. And the Hebrew understanding would be that it is a rebuilding of the month, waxing through its phases. So knowing that he was actually speaking in Hebrew kind of helps you understand why he says what he says. It wanes after being full, and it gets its name from what it does. Also, the reason why I say that it's good to discuss it is not only is there a lot of controversy on the subject of what months are to be used, but since Josephus and the Bible seem to indicate that a Kodesh is definitely a lunar month, but how that would work dealing in the month of Abib. As all lunar months, if you were using a lunar Sabbath cycle, which is derived essentially from Genesis chapter 1:14, which tells us that God made the lights in the heaven to be used for special purposes. Two of those special purposes would be that it was made for signs and seasons, for days and years, it goes on to say. And just focusing on signs and seasons, that a sign is something that is actually seen by the eye or sensed by a person. It's something that can be sensed. A season, as we discussed, is an appointed time. Jesus, son of Sirach, told us, as we just read here, that the feasts, it is the moon that signals the feasts. So, in that statement, we can go back to the Psalms, which also has a place in it that says Psalm 104 verse 19 says the same thing as Ecclesiasticus. It says he appointed, or he had made, the moon for seasons. That's the same word, moeds, appointed times. The sun knoweth his going down. He goes on to talk about animals and the way that they respond to God's creation also. But he goes out of his way in 104 to say that the moon was made or appointed, as how he said it. He appointed the moon, which could be answer to some of those questions as to when the creation of things happened, but whether it was made at the beginning when the heavens were made or whether it was appointed at the fourth day. But here he says he appointed the moon for seasons and the sun knows is going down. So if the moon is appointed for seasons, which are appointed times, and we already know from Genesis 1:14 that that's the case also, that, you know, he made the lights for that. The moon is attributed with that. Going to Leviticus chapter 23, we read this. Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, say unto them concerning the feasts. Now we're going to stop there. The word feast is moed once again, or Moedim. I'm not going to change back and forth in the Hebrew every time I say it, but it is the same Hebrew word being used when I read the word feast, and I'll just read the word as appointed time. The literal translation would be a good translation to read to get a consistent understanding of what is being said here. So he says, speak unto the children of Israel, say unto them concerning the appointed times of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my appointed times. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation. Ye shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of Yahweh in all of your dwellings. These are the appointed times of Yahweh, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their appointed times. Seems like he was trying to get a point across. The first one being listed, the first moed, the first appointed time listed is what? Anybody know? The Sabbath. The Sabbath is the first moed listed, appointed time. Well, going back to our biblical source, Psalm 104:19 says, he appointed the moon for appointed times, seasons, moeds. So if the Sabbath is a appointed time, then it appoints not just the feasts that happen like Passover and Pentecost and Tabernacles, which all interestingly enough happen on the 15th or the full moon of the month, but that the Sabbath itself every 7 days is going to run on a cycle that's dictated by the moon, because the psalmist told us that he made it for a special purpose, and that was the purpose we're supposed to use it for. Assuming that David is correct. Now he goes on to say, these are the feasts of Yahweh, holy convocations, which ye shall proclaim in their appointed times. And then he lists off the 14th day, 15th day of the same month, which is the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and he goes on to list off all the Sabbatic feasts